We're going to flip here with Kane Corns and check in on the footy news of the day, and we might chat a little bit about the Olympics as well. Kane, have I got you?
You've had a big day. We've had a massive day. This combination seems to be working just nicely.
You go first. I want you to go first today, okay. Kane. So okay. Is Lance Franklin bound for the tribunal tonight?
Yeah, he is. 5 o'clock this afternoon. That will be heard. We spoke to Jared McVeigh from the Swans, Jared, and clearly their case is going to be made around three incidents that he referenced with us. The two that spring to mind is Luke Shuey got off and got a fine, as did Asprey as well early on the year. There was one other.
Joe Danaher was the other one.
Yeah, so that will be their defence, and it is a little bit hard to argue, albeit I look at it and I judge it and I think, well, that's a stupid thing to do. That's 1 week. But I can understand why the Swans are putting it up.
Yeah, so we showed these three last night on 360 and they were all careless and low impact. And then Franklin, so if it had been judged intentional, he couldn't have beaten it. But it's come back as careless, just like the other three. And somehow or another, the contact on Luke Ryan's been elevated to medium. The other three were all low. I'd like to be making this case tonight. I think this should be a suspension. It should have been a suspension all year, beginning with Asprey. But once you lay down three times this and then move it a category without really any justification, it's a makeable case.
It is, absolutely, and it will be fascinating to see. There's been some good success at the tribunal when you've taken it there in terms of getting off. I won't be surprised at all if he does get off. But it was interesting as well, just the other things out of the Swans, how they're navigating it, how they've balanced giving their players some downtime, but then really focusing on business. I think they're stealing themselves, Jared. I think they think they're almost ready. And Jared said to us, you just don't get these opportunities very often. So I think they've become everyone's second favourite team this year, and let's see how far they can go.
How ominous the announcement from government authorities today that no crowds for round 20 or round 21, which puts us on an extremely tight timeline towards September and the grand final.
It's on a knife's edge, isn't it? So lockdown 4 in Victoria went 7 weeks between zero crowds to 40,000. Saturday, 7 weeks to the grand final, Jared. So you can do the maths now. Not saying things can't move a little bit faster, but for me, 40,000 isn't enough. If it's 40 in 7 weeks, which has been the precedent in the past from lockdown 4, it's going to be moved. How quickly they can get it to that, it's probably going to have to be 65-70. I would think that would be my gut feel at the MCG. Knife's edge, and we know, as I said to a few callers this morning, it's ridiculous even speculating about it because things can change in half an hour, let alone 7 weeks. But they're going to have to make a call probably at the start of August, and it could go either way. Have you got a view? They are running out of time. Is that your view?
It has to be able to outdraw Optus Stadium for me.
Yeah.
So it's got to be 60,000 and change. And that goes to the willingness or otherwise of the government and health authorities. And there'd been such a reticence to lift those crowds after the previous lockdown, and that was before there'd been community transmission. So I think health authorities would feel quite justified in what they had done once we've had transmission at two sporting events. So to get beyond 40,000 is a stretch, and it would rely on the government going, no, we must stage the grand final and we're prepared to make concessions on that front. But the capacity of Optus Stadium in Perth is 60,156. So right. For the MCG, in my opinion, to host the grand final, it has to be able to stage 60,157. That's the measure.
And that's what I think as well. And even at that figure, the atmosphere is going to be better at Optus Stadium because it's going to be jam-packed to the rafters, where at the MCG, 60,000 is still going to feel a bit barren. And it's too early to have the vaccination discussion this year. I think that'll certainly come next year. But you can't require vaccination into the event unless it's opened up to everyone. And the fact that not everyone in the population has had the opportunity to get vaccinated means that that's off the cards. But I think that will be the discussion into 2022, whether the crowd to go to the footy has to be vaccinated. That's a topic for another day.
And just eavesdropping on your texts, I hope you don't mind. The Hawthorn discussion has continued on?
Well, in a big way. Predictably, and rightly so, Hutchie sort of grilled Caroline Wilson on her report from a week ago. It feels a long time ago, but she hasn't really spoken since Mitchell spoke on your show and Clarkson spoke in that extraordinary press conference on Friday. She stood by her story. Jared, I think she was you know, a little bit testy with Hutchie in the line of questioning, but that's what classified is all about. The most stunning thing out of it was, for me, there's still some sort of sentiment, and certainly, you know, Hutchie's opinion is that if he had to go one way or the other, he still thinks Alistair Clarkson may not be there next year. I find that staggering listening to Alistair Clarkson on Friday. Like, I was pretty convinced the first time he said he'll be there next year. Then he doubled down on it and cited, you know, all sorts of, you know, family tragedies and issues in his life for an 11-minute period, committing to the Hawthorn. I could not believe one bit of me that he won't be there next year. I'd be completely stunned if Alistair Clarkson did an about-face and wasn't there. So now okay. we watch and we see how this partnership continues to roll on.
You and I are aligned on that. Is Clarkson has quite deliberately ended that conversation. He's wedded himself to Sam Mitchell, and he's placed his honour right at the core of that. I believe every word of what he said. Kane, did you just sneak a peek at Kayleigh McEwen?
I did. I'm sort of running. Where I'm broadcasting from is a big boardroom at in Adelaide here, number one on King William Street, which is where our sales team usually come. They're not in the office clearly for obvious reasons at the moment. There's no TV where I am, so I've got to run. It's been very fortunate. The 400 was smack bang in an ad break. I missed the last of it, and then the one today, I just caught glimpses of it and following it on social media. Was this a surprise?
No.
In terms of what she... No?
No, she was the world record holder. But what this is, right, Kane, is these are the medals, these are the gold medals that Australia's missed at the past two games, where they've had the number one seed really well perform through world championships on times, and they haven't been able to convert them to gold medals. It's why in Rio there were three and why in London there was one. And there's been a lot of time spent in swimming's inner sanctum, working out how to harness the athlete's capacity to deliver their best performance in the race when it matters. Part of that has been the movement of the trials in line with what the US have always done, 5 or 6 weeks out from the games rather than 3 months out. And the times that we're seeing from the Australians and living up to the billing supports that move at the moment. And this does open the way, is the Titmus gold medal yesterday and the emotional influx into the team, and then McEwen backing that up. Ariane will be a hot favourite in the 200 freestyle tomorrow night. You've got Kyle Chalmers the next night in the 100 metres freestyle. The relays are stitched in there as well, the medley on the women's front. This is going to be a swimming team that returns us to Beijing 6, Athens 7, Sydney 5 in terms of gold medals. And so much of what happens for Australia's campaign is built around the swimming. And the swimming is going to give a platform on which to launch back up the medal table.
It's the most captivating thing about the Olympics, isn't it? And to hear you describe it there, where you wait 4 years for your 4 minutes or your 70 seconds or your 10 seconds if you're a 100-metre sprinter, 4 years, in this case, five, for that moment. How do you mentally prepare yourself for that moment to be at your absolute best? Now, and a lot of these events have been held in the morning, which is unusual as well for the athletes. So I've heard them speak about how the fact that they've been preparing themselves to go hard right in the morning, when usually in the past their hard training sessions have been in the afternoon. So all of this preparation, the mental aspect of it, is what captivates us by the Olympics. And look, athletics is my sweet spot, Jared. So next week, you watch out. I will be making sure I'm smack bang in front of a TV. I want to talk to you a little bit about a 44-year-old marathon runner who's going to be towing the start line. Her name's Sinead Diver. She's a Melburnian, and she's going to do some incredible things, I think. But we'll leave that discussion for
great
next week.
Oh, I look forward to it, Kane. So what do we say at the end? Flip off?
Yep, flip off, Jared. Speak to you tomorrow.
So SEN Flip, Kane Corns is running the footy conversation. To correspond, it's the same way as always, 1-300-736-736. We're sharing the phones, we're sharing the text. Give us both a call. Shoot off in whichever direction you like, the Olympics or the footy. That's how matters stand.